I see you survived.
Skin of our teeth.
You knew that was their nesting ground, didn't you? And you had us draw our phasers to incite them. Why?
I had to know what you'd do when you encountered a life form vastly different than your own. Would you just see an enemy? Or would you try to connect? That's vital for whoever gets the progenitor's technology.
Welcome to Strange New Takes. I'm your host, Notch Carning, and with me, keeping our jackets open so it's clear where someone else is,
Adam Bowen.
Reed Dressler.
Emily Bowen Marler.
Welcome to Strange New Takes. Today we'll be covering the third episode of Season 5 of Discovery, Janal.
You can follow us on social media at Strange New Takes for Facebook, Instagram, and even Threads.
Tell your friends about the pod. You can give us and encourage them to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. You know, just spread the word, because what's more fun than listening to a bunch of friends talk about Star Trek?
And, of course, as in every week, we spoil stuff on the show. We're going to spoil Janal for sure. Maybe lots of other things in Discovery. Maybe some things in the rest of Star Trek. Maybe some other stuff. So just be warned that spoilers are in your future if you continue to listen. All right, well, this week, as Adam told us, we're talking about Janal. It's the third episode of the fifth season of Star Trek Discovery. It first aired on the 11th of April, 2024. It was written by Kyle Jarrow and Lauren Wilkinson. It was directed by Andy Armageddon. Nope, that's wrong. Andy Armaganian. In-universe, we don't know the star date, but the actual date is 3191. Here's the summary from Memory Alpha on Trill. Burnham, Booker, and Culber must pass a dangerous test to prove themselves worthy of the next clue. Adira reconnects with Gray and Saru's first day as ambassadors, complicated by his engagement to Chirina, and the new first officer gets completely ignored in this summary. All right, we always start with our strange new takes. Which of you have a strange new take for me?
For real life, my strange new take is that I watched all of the Fallout series, the new TV series that came out just a few days ago, and it's incredible. I think basically Todd Howard must have realized that he could only make one thing good. It was either going to be Starfield or it was going to be the Fallout TV series, and he made sure that the Fallout TV series was good, and I think that was the correct choice. For the episode, maybe this is a little bit distant from the episode, because I think that my wife has this take for the entire season, but I wanted to share it, which is her prediction is that the real progenitor's technology is the friends we made along the way. And that does feel like we're going in that direction this episode.
Okay, my strange new take for life, I think, is that I really enjoy Tig Notaro, and I was really happy to see her on this. This is actually my Star Trek strange new take, by the way, but I was happy to see her on the episode this week. But I watched the documentary on Netflix about her. I don't get the chance to watch very many things, so and I've just been super busy lately, but I thought I'm going to sit down and I'm going to watch this documentary, because I listened to the Handsome Pod, shout out to another podcast, and she's on that, and she's very funny. But oh my gosh, it made me cry. But anyway, she's just a brilliant comedian, and I really appreciate her comedy. So shout out for Tig Notaro. That's my strange new take. My strange new take for the show, I just feel like this is some good Star Trek that we've got going. Like, it's just, this is just solid. Yeah. I'm just enjoying it. It's solid. It's, I mean, none of it is blowing me away. Mm-hmm. This isn't my rating yet, but I feel good about it. I'm like, I'm enjoying watching this Star Trek story unfold. So.
Well, I think for me, it is an intensely disappointing thing in my life that rechargeable batteries are not as good as actual batteries. And sure, some of them come close, but like, not really. And I really try to, you know, reuse and try to like make sure that I'm like, you know, doing right by the planet or whatever. But like, it's incredibly annoying to be always replacing my AA's and AAA's and stuff around the house because like they're just not as good as, you know, store-bought ones. So that's it's very frustrating. On the other side, I mean, I find myself reflecting similar things in Star Trek Discovery about like, hey, this is pretty great. What I will say in this episode is it is the thing I referenced in our intro, which is just, it's very funny that Wilson Cruz had him like open his jacket to be like, he's Janelle now. And when it's like back to being Culber, it's like, okay, he's zipping up the jacket. He's Culber now. And
yes.
I also appreciated the comment about, wow, this guy works out. Or this body works
out. That was the start of the episode for sure.
Yeah. I mean,
Wilson Cruz is a fine specimen of a human being. So, you know.
Very, very true. And I mean, I know why they do it. Because like viewers are confused and they want to give a clear visual, you know, whatever, like, you know, it's Spock's goatee in the evil, like, right. universe, right? Like,
or when Odo got spots when he was Curzon Dax. Remember when they did the same thing on Deep Space Nine?
So, yeah. I mean, it all makes sense. But at the same time, I'm just like, this is so funny.
My life strange new take is going to be a follow-up from last week's, which is the alarm system has worked maybe a little too well. It's like my brain got, you know, like mildly traumatized. And so I wake up multiple times in the night and like immediately check my phone to make sure that I don't have to do. And I've changed it. I don't have to do 70 squats ever again if I don't want to. But it doesn't know that. So I've been getting up a little too early even. And the cats have caught on to that. So now they will wake me up even earlier. So sleep has been really strange. As for the Star Trek one, I've got one on the episode that I wouldn't have remembered to mention except Notch brought it up, which is basically piggybacking off of his, that on top of opening up your jacket, you can also sound like you might be a villain. And then that'll be a way. Because the whole time I was like, is he evil? You know, he's got this weird whisper voice he's doing with it. And he's like, we're going to go out to the rocks. And it's like, what is he going to do with them at the rocks, you know?
I thought he sounded like LeVar Burton. Like, I don't know what it was, but the way he... I was like, why does he sound like LeVar? Like, this is so weird. And then I was trying to... Does Wilson Cruz normally sound like LeVar Burton? I have never noticed that before. But for whatever reason, when he is playing Janelle, he sounds like LeVar Burton to me.
So. I was definitely about to be like, they need to run because he's like, let's go to the rocks. No, yes. I don't know where it is exactly. You know,
get into this van that says free candy.
Yeah, I was a little worried for them. I don't know if they were going for that or if they were like you're saying, just kind of like got to differentiate. But the only other thing is, I don't know if you all get the Star Trek shop emails to buy things, but
sometimes
I feel like I get them all the time and I should really stop checking them out. But every once in a while they get me with like, I do want a Kirk with Tribbles coffee mug where if you put the water, it creates all the tribbles. So
yeah,
I need to stop checking that because it's a little
dangerous.
I think
you do need that.
I do have it. No, I did buy that.
Have it.
Yeah, I have the tribbles one. Yeah. So I have that in a Discovery hoodie, but they keep coming up with new things. So.
All right. Well, let's jump into talking about this episode. By the way, when we finish this episode, we should talk about a little bit of news. I got some stuff about Star Trek jerseys. I got some news about like renewals and cancellations. Yep. So we gotta catch up. Let's jump into talking about the episode first. Which we've already kind of started with our Strange New Takes, but we'll just go a little bit more in depth. So this is basically the Discovery equivalent of a bottle episode, right? Well, not quite, because they did take us off the ship, but it's kind of like they had like three sets and they used them for every scene in every little story. There were four subplots, so there's quite a lot happening. With the majority of the action on Trill in a magical mystery kind of, you know, like, oh, find the clues, solve the thing. It's very like Battlestar Galactica season one vibe, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe setting wise, though, tonally, very different than Battlestar Galactica.
I didn't want everyone to die at any point in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, there's not the, like, constant tension. I mean, I feel like it's more exciting than, like, sinister, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the characters all are playing it that way, that they're excited about this. Like, mm-hmm. even though, obviously, because it's Discovery, we have to make sure everyone knows this could be the end of everything, you know. But we're really excited about this, about
less
this adventure
of that
run.
This time.
Right.
Yeah. So let's just break this episode down into its components, subplots. I don't know which one we should talk about first. Maybe the least high stakes one, which is the one with Tarina and Saru learning how to be a partner, mm-hmm. and, you know, be supportive. Did I ask for your protection or care or whatever she says? Yeah. And he's like, no.
Apparently in the 31st century, you know, we still need to break down some of those gender roles, but, you know, or the, would it be the 32nd century?
I think I like my secondary strange new take is I feel like she probably should have recused herself from that vote. Don't we? Isn't that like a normal thing to do when you're either you have like some interest in voting along the lines of somebody else's? I mean, I guess she's not a judge. And I also don't know the rules of whatever their republic is.
Right.
But I don't know. It seems a little weird to be like, even if he's not like of a different species, be like, my boyfriend wanted me to do this thing, and so I voted with him in this group so that the thing happens.
Well, then it makes it seem like, can they actually serve on this council together then, if that's the case? Because they're always... And we saw what happened last year when someone's boyfriend voted against or was working against what the other person wanted. You know, we had... That was high stakes.
I feel like I have a lot of like... I have a lot of hopes for this that will not happen because I'm getting into a little too political junkie desire for it. I was just thinking about how, you know, the Vulcan purists are against this, and that's a faction she needs to worry about, but she's not concerned about it. And her vote is something that's helping the larger Federation against a sort of isolationist faction. And Saru's worried about her political career, right? And she says, you don't need to worry about that. I know what's best for me. Well, she's the president of Navarre, right? That's what it's called. So what is above president of Navarre? Well, president of the Federation. So alienating an isolationist faction to help your, you know, smaller colonies and the wider Federation interests, the next step would be Federation president. Do I think it'll go there? Probably not, but that's like my dream.
We're going to do some Game of Thrones shit.
Yeah. No, there could be an election.
I actually read some discarded scripts for the season of Discovery. It's pretty cool how they were sent to me for review. But like what they actually had was Tarina's first name is actually Hillary, and she's running against the candidate of the Vulcan purist, Turump. And, you know, there's going to be a whole plot, man, about this election on Vulcan.
You joke. But do you know about the comic books that are set during the, like, Kirk era original series that riff off of that?
Oh, God, no. Why?
Because I believe Mudd runs for the president of the Federation on a xenophobic platform. And I don't know much beyond that because I found the Cracked article on this.
Oh my gosh.
But the cover shows Scotty with like a wrench behind Mudd with his arms skewed, looking like a demagogue in front of this audience. And the Cracked article jokes like, is he going to hit him on the head with the wrench or something? So they've already in the expanded universe done something a little like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you, with the proponents of other like media that we have covering that whole situation, I'm okay with Star Trek staying very metaphorical when it comes to that sort of stuff.
But you know, one thing I did wonder was if there's a chance that her assistant could be part of the Vulcan purists or somehow have some, even if he's not, like, maybe he has some...
I mean, his eyebrow ridges are they're a little too ridgy for me to feel like he doesn't have some Romulan ancestry there, so...
But that would be good. because
it's like Voldemort was part Muggle, and
there we go.
Because you know, the Romulans of the Navarre, I would believe, if I'm remembering previous Discovery well enough, were more pro Federation inclusion.
Yeah, so. It is interesting that most of the people that we've met in like the political upper echelons have been Vulcans. And so it's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't know where they're going to take this plot, but I think you're right, Reed, in that they have something coming up with this. They're dropping too much smoke for there not to be a fire of some sort related to
also,
politics.
This is a really strong faction of Vulcans because they have been around for centuries.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's just like, they don't
the
go away
extremists.
Because they were talking. Yeah, exactly.
800 years later and they're still.
Yeah.
Well, now they're the Vulcan purists instead of the logic extremists. But yeah,
but
probably seems
I think
like
there,
a similar
I think
kind
there
of
are
thing.
Connections just like, you know.
And Michael Burnham has been the hatred of both. So, you know, your great, great, great grandchildren can hate the same person if time travel is involved.
I mean, this is real life, so.
Right. It's happening. I do wonder if she would run against Rilik. That feels not very Discovery because the show has us liking Rilik. So I would be very shocked if there was some sort of policy dispute and then she runs against Rilik to maybe she'll get term limited. I don't know the ins and outs of the Federation Constitution because they keep that purposefully vague.
So I'm hoping honestly, honestly, Reed, I'm hoping that they just kind of use this plot as a little bit of like Siru coming out of his bubble. But like, I would be happy with them not going deep into like Federation politics because one of the things I've enjoyed.
This is only a relationship dynamics type thing.
And I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll have the Vulcan purists like kill her to like put some stress on Saru or some crazy shit like that. I have no idea what these writers are going to do. But like, one of the things that I was going to say is a reflection I had while watching this episode is that this season of Discovery generally seems to have a slightly faster pace than previous seasons. And I'm really enjoying that. And it was evident that this plot line, for example, slowed things down a little bit, which, you know, I didn't hate it or anything. I didn't think it was unnecessary, but like, I was just like, this is kind of a little bit slower than the more enjoyable parts of this episode.
Ashley looked over at me and she said, I don't care about this subplot at all. So to your point, I'm like, oh, this is so exciting. Finally, some more politics in Star Trek. And I liked that, like from a story perspective, that Saru is nervous and they're setting that up and that they're playing off of these relationship dynamics. And yeah, he doesn't have a lot of experience with relationships. I liked all the character stuff they were using with it.
What about the plot? So the other kind of plot that doesn't have like huge ramifications just yet was Raynor coming onto the ship and kind of, I mean, let's be honest, he's playing a Lorca character, right? Pretty much. I think the one thing that we did not get was there was a version in this where in the final scene he's like, here's all the stuff I figured out. And Tilly's like, oh, wow, you were listening the whole time.
Right. I was afraid of that. I was so afraid of that.
And instead, we basically got him realizing that his like smarty pants attitude is not going to get him anywhere with this crew.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was good.
I came away writing down, someone read Brené Brown for this subplot. You know, like the leadership's not about being tough and knowing facts. It's about connecting and relationships. And Tilly, very, you know, just out and out says it.
Well, and that's been kind of that's one of the themes of Voyager, of Discovery. Like that's
absolutely.
Kind of, you know, that's one of the driving forces on the show. It's like, I was watching the before the season started Ready Room episode, and Sonequa Martin-Green was talking about, you know, I mean, this Discovery has always been about story arcs and character growth that stays, like like the characters don't go back to what they were before just because of this thing that happened. And part of that has just been through all of the ways that their relationships with one another have propelled them and supported them. And
I fully forgot that Ready Room existed. I just, I, uh, I got so allergic to watching it on Paramount Plus because it has no ability to remember that you used to be watching this episode and that you should resume instead of restarting. I have no idea why they built it that way. It's a horrible piece of software.
Yeah.
But they did start playing him on YouTube. So I was watching it like last season. I just didn't. YouTube didn't think that I was interested this time. And so
probably not.
I had no idea it existed.
What do y'all think about kind of Rainer's whole take on like there's too many important things happening. I need to spend my time on the issue at hand versus playing nice. Because like there is a world in which that makes some sense, which is like, you know, it's important. Like I'm on this short-term assignment. I need to figure out the problem. There'll be time later after the current crisis has passed to like make time for the crew.
You know, it's so hard. This makes me think of how, okay, just go with me here on this one. So when we were trying to get a SOGI ordinance, the Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Non-Discrimination Ordinance, kept in Springfield because there was a repeal campaign to take it away. So when we were trying to get it to remain, one of the methods that they were training people on was having one-on-one conversations, building relationships with people, and then having, you know, then having the conversation about this important legislation so that they could see the humanity behind it rather than just, hey, you need to vote this way, you know. But that takes a long time. And it's, you know, like, so it was, I don't know. Anyway, so, but I'm seeing that so much in a lot of the activism that people are engaging in, trying to do more building of relationships, and you know, you have to talk with your family members, you have to do this, and then but sometimes it's like, but things just need to change now. Like sometimes we, you know what, we just need to pass a law and just hope that people get on board, you know. Like there are a lot of things that were legislated before people were on board with them, but eventually they got on board, you know. And it's just, how do you, I don't know, but I kind of see hints of that in this as well. It's just kind of, I can see valid, I can see pros and cons for both sides.
And that is where Discovery is always, because Discovery has my heart, where it wants everything to work out in these great ways. So it makes sure to frame it in a way where that is the right answer. Because to your point, Notch, Tilly is saying things like, we already have someone, you know, monitoring that. We already know where they are. We're already doing this. We're already doing that. And so all of the emergency elements of it are being taken care of. So he could be meeting with these people. And maybe that's Discovery not necessarily being fair to the thematic debate there, because it has a very clear end goal theme that it wants to get across. And that's why I love Discovery, but it's also what makes Discovery a bit idealistic, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like they're not going to just bring him on to only teach him a lesson, though. Because like part of the pitch of Rainer is also that he is like a strong, he is also a force, sort of in opposition to Burnham. And I feel like I feel like they wouldn't have her bring in someone who's just going to be shitty until he like learns lessons to like care for everybody in the same way. I think that there's got to be some sort of arc where the Discovery crew gets something valuable from his perspective as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Because they are like very, like, it's a very like hashtag work-life balance kind of ship, where like that's been like the theme of every single episode, especially in the 32nd century type stuff. And I think it's, in some ways it's been like weirdly incongruous with the actual plotting of the seasons, like in the end of season 4, when we're like, hey, maybe we should not tell everybody that Earth is about to be destroyed because they're under a lot of pressure right now, and we should just like let them focus on the goal. And it's like, no, I'm gonna play the death of Earth while we're about to like go on this part of the mission on the audio. And it's just, yeah, I feel like they're trying to do something with Rainer, and I really hope that it's not just like that he's
teach him a lesson.
Yeah, yeah, because that doesn't seem interesting to me. Like, well, he could just be a bad Merl that we teach a lesson to in 40 minutes and then we don't ever see him again.
So I did appreciate, now I appreciate that. So, you know, I think it was you, Notch, that was talking about how, so Raynor shows that he actually did assimilate the information that the crew was sharing with him, along with what he had read about them in their files. And then Tilly's like, yeah, that's still not, you know, she didn't just go, oh, you were listening all along. But I also think it showed us something interesting about Raynor that is something to be appreciated. And right. So hopefully that's what the crew, you know, can gain as well. Because I think he did, like, some of the stuff he gained about, who was the one that said, was it Reese talking about really, he really likes ships. And so, like, that was the first one I think he pointed out. So in his brain, he's thinking about, well, how can we utilize these things that aren't in their file to make them the best officers for the task at hand, or anyway.
I think, so underlying all of this is the admission that Discovery is maybe slightly different sort of ship, right? Like, it's kind of a meta comment in some ways on this series versus the others. It's funny, you know, if someone who's like criticized Discovery's like over emotional attitude to things, or over dramatic, or whatever you want to call it, I did find myself saying, like, dude, if you're going to lead these people, also the first officer is typically the people officer, right? Compared to the captain on starships. It's like, you've got to make a little bit of effort with your bridge crew to, like, you know, sit down with them for coffee and, like... So, I like your all's takes on it a little bit better than mine, so let's see where it goes. But I'm glad we're getting to see this side of what's going on in the background. And it's not just, like... In action sequences, we hear Raynor going,
right.
Captain, you're wrong. And she's like, you've always been against me. And, like, you know, like, it's not just that kind of stereotypical thing. We're getting to see a little bit under the covers. And it's more complex of a portrayal, even.
I mean, yeah, like, some of the best Star Trek has been, like, when we actually do look into the power structure a bit and, like, see Riker giving people performance reviews. So, like, if we get to see a little bit of that with Raynor, as he sort of struggles with it as well, I think it'll be, there's some interesting Star Trek ahead for us.
Some of the best Star Trek is when Riker's getting coffee with someone in 10 Forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially, like, when he sits in the chair.
Oh, wait, he's an XO. He actually needs to do...
Yeah, and he does this leg over the chair thing. And...
All right. So that's our Raynor plot. That's 2 out of 4. Let's go to Adira and Gray. We were talking about this last week. We were like, what's going to happen? And turns out what's going to happen is a breakup.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a weird moment where Gray said something like, there are all kinds of relationships. I'm like,
yes.
Is this solution going to be that we're going to, like, have multiple boyfriends and girlfriends or something? Like, I don't understand where you're, I'm like, oh, okay, you're breaking up. That makes sense.
That was the most subtle reference to polyamory.
Yeah.
I think Paramount Plus, you know, or whoever's in charge, they wanted it to be a nod to that, but they were very afraid of out and out saying it. So
they just haven't had it since the Denobulans, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, again, as someone who has sometimes criticized Discovery's, you know, everybody holds hands and cries every minute, stuff. I thought that was very well handled.
I thought so too. It was quick.
It was to the point. It was very
heartfelt.
Yeah, it was real. Yeah. And it felt awkward.
Yeah.
It was awkward. But I mean, they are awkward characters.
It's an awkward situation. It's a good remember. It's like, oh yeah, I was 16 or whatever it is that they're supposed to be, type situation. So, it was a. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah.
I wanted Adira to go to Paul, right? Paul, that's his name?
Yeah, Stamets.
Paul Stamets,
and go at the end and, like, cry into his shoulder, but maybe that'll be...
See, that was season 4 of Discovery.
Yeah.
And instead, what we get is Reno going to Stamets and being like, you dum-dum, like, they're gonna break up.
Right.
Which is great. I did enjoy that part as well.
Yeah.
Any Reno stuff is good. I'm always saying to myself, need more Reno. Reno's introduction to the show is one of my favorite things. So the more the better. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we should get a Jed Reno guest spot on Lower Decks. I think she would thrive.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Tignataro would thrive in Lower Decks.
Oh, yeah. Yes. For sure.
Like, I think they need to send Boimler and Mariner to the future now that they have a time device and get to hang out with Jet Reno. And so I think that was overall a good plot, and it served a purpose. Like, Adidar hanging back was, like, the point where Maul got to stick a tracker on them. So, like, it was tastefully done. I think not much more to say on that one. So let's then turn to the main plot, which is our, you know, favorite rapscallion of the future and our favorite captain of the future running around from indescript computer-generated creatures, which is, you know, was their first episode together. It was also like that.
I like the indescript creatures. They were cool.
And indescript.
And yeah. Well, they had a
those
name.
Those bug things?
Yeah. Those bug things.
Yeah. I thought that they were very straight. Like, it's just like, I guess to some degree, I always think about, or my assumption is always that everyone else's, like, main sentient species would be the apex predator of their world or would have, like, murdered everything else the way that humans have. So it's interesting to find, like, an advanced civilization that, like, has something that totally eats them whenever they, like, go into the wrong canyon or whatever.
Well, the Trill are big hippie energy.
I can see it when you bring it out that way, that they would just accept that they need to be eaten sometimes.
I mean, that's why they're trusted with this knowledge at some level, right? The progenitor.
Yeah, exactly. There's a purpose there. And right. But let's rewind a bit and go back to the canyon. So basically, this is the Battlestar stuff we were talking about. It's a puzzle. Everything's been set out. All of this has happened before, and all of it will happen again. It's like, oh, there's a question. Riddle me this. Answer these questions. Three, if you wish to go over the bridge. You know, so it was kind of like that. Except Burnham kind of got, like, I expected when that question was asked, I was like, this is going to be some, like, deep riddle. It's going to be hard. Burnham was like, four. There are five verses. What does the fourth verse say? Like, it's, like, so easy. Yeah. I was like,
yeah.
All right. Okay. And we just went from there where it was, like, finding a symbiont who's miraculously still alive.
I was actually just sort of thinking, like, oh, where could they be going next? And realized it's very lucky that the Romulan was the one that had just, like, a ship in a random somewhere, because if he had stored that on Romulus, it would be exploded. And they would not be able to solve the mystery.
It's true. Was anyone else reminded of some of the settings for Deep Space Nine when they were walking in the canyon area? There were several, and I know that Discovery is filmed in Toronto, so it wouldn't have been in LA, but I just was getting DS9 vibes as they were walking through with some of the Jem'Hadar battles and stuff that they had.
Lots of Quarry action in those.
Yeah, but I appreciated the, I forgot about Book being able to communicate with animals. Mm-hmm. I was glad they brought that back.
Yeah. And I forgot that she was a Xeno.
Yeah,
anthropologists. So they were bringing back all their special powers for this.
Right.
You know, and this is the stuff I always talk about. I love with the open-hearted.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. They've got to be empathetic and compassionate. And that's the solution. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I liked that, too. And that the reason Book wasn't able to communicate with the creatures the first time was because they were armed.
Yes.
Yeah. And so that blocked the ability to. Anyway,
I wondered about that when he's like, yeah, make sure to get your phasers out. You know, these creatures I've studied. And he's talking about how they're afraid that civilizations were too violent during the Dominion War, and so they're setting it up so well in my head. I'm thinking, why is he telling him to get his phasers out when I love that. I thought that came together so incredibly well
and then how chill he was after.
They also set up, like, how they set up that's sort of like the wrong answer when he's like, oh, we'll walk slow, we'll just kind of, like, amble around, because, like, if he was working with these creatures so much, like, he knows that the safe way to do it is just kind of, like, not worry about them,
right?
And kind of really do your own thing.
Yeah, it's pretty neat kind of setup, and basically leads them to the puzzle, which turned out to not be a puzzle. It's just it's literally just like, what will you do in the situation, and can you get out of it alive because you care for creatures, or do you, you know...
It's a test.
Yeah, it's a test. And they pass the test and find Janal again, who gives them the clue. And it's all very easy. Like, it's not like, you know, there's not like a lot of like back and forth, like action, dialogue. It's very different to like the last episode where they had to like problem solve every 5 seconds, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, this is kind of classic Trek, like...
Yes.
Or classic 90s Trek, you know, yes. Just kind of, yeah.
And they even mentioned it was a red herring. And then they get into how a red herring as a phrase is a red herring.
Yeah.
I was really enjoyed that. I don't know that it added a ton to the episode, but I had fun with that.
Yeah.
No, totally. And I genuinely do think also Wilson's Cruz did a great job in portraying Janal as a different character than Culber. And it was kind of fun seeing them interact with one another, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I agree. It was good.
I had a little bit of feelings of like, was the actress they hired to be Janal not good enough to portray him? So like, Wilson Cruz, you come here, you do it better.
I thought she was cool looking. I liked her.
Old. Like, you know, couldn't have like an old like character like, you know, running. It just would have strained credulity to have that person like running into the valley. And
they 100% did it so that Wilson Cruz could say, this body works out.
It shows range a bit, right? Like, which is pretty cool. And
him being taken over with the consciousness and reminded me, I've rather recently seen the original Next Gen episode with the symbiosis. And I just remember going, this is such a weird relationship because it feels as though Riker is completely gone. There's no Riker, and there's that sexual moment. And then that is not commented on. And I thought that was really problematic, but I guess the Next Generation was not concerned about that sort of question of consent in a body. They had other questions. The 90s, yes. They had other questions. And so this one was also funny because Hugh is completely gone during that whole time. It's just the symbiote.
Oh yeah, that is interesting. How they mirror each other a little bit there.
But Gray has more of a symbiotic relationship, right?
Adira.
Who has the
symbiote? Adira has the symbiote.
Adira has symbiote. Gray doesn't.
Although listening to another podcast and they were talking about how little Adira talks about it. Like, it's just not
right.
Like when we first met Adira, she did talk because who was it? Her previous host before the host before Gray, the one that was part of the Federation. But anyway, so they talked about it then, but they never talk about it now. So
that's what's just confusing not a thing. To me.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I honestly had also like forgotten a bit of the threads.
Because Tal is the symbiote.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. Right. My wife had remembered that Gray was a robot. I'm like, I don't even remember what you're talking about. I'm like,
she's like Picard.
Yeah.
She's in a golem.
Yeah.
My precious. Oh, wait, wrong franchise.
Wrong golem. So now the coordinates to the next clue are on the thing. And we also found out with the lore that there are these like 5 scientists who all set out to do the right thing. And I think there were 6 and 1 died or something. And so like basically we're going to go from like, it's basically setting up a show that's going to take us to the 5 major worlds, right? Of like each of the scientists. And we're going to like probably have a little bit of a, which is just kind of nice.
It's so
remember in the first episode they started with like cocktails themed on the Federation. So this might end up being something where we get to see what happened to the original Federation races. So like there might be a Klingon episode, there might be a Andorian episode. There's a bunch of stuff about like the Breen, so like at some point we're gonna bump into the Breen
as the Breen are a threat. And that's what the Saru, the vote for the starbase to counter that threat. And that makes me wonder if they're really going to get to keep the progenitor technology. Adam, as you're saying, it's the friends we made along the way because they're asked, you know, by the book says something along the lines of it's a sort of peace because they're asked, are you at peace? And it's a sort of peace. I don't know that they get to keep the technology. I think maybe they will destroy it for the good of the galaxy because people aren't trustworthy for it.
But there is that feels antithetical to Discovery's like vibe though, to sort of have them conclude that we can't be trusted with the thing.
I think in another Star Trek series, about like they could do bringing that. Dead people to life, like that's too much power for a TV show, you know? Like yeah. There's no way to like
yeah.
build continuity around
where,
yeah, that.
Where yeah, does Star they, Trek
where's the Black there? Mountain in that? Like we can't just have that.
Isn't that the Black Mountain?
You had to fight a duplicate of your father.
So I wonder if they hide the technology, if it's a they become the new scientists who hide a sort of cyclical story.
Yeah, right.
Just like how they sent the sphere data into the future so that control couldn't get it.
Right.
They'll send Zora into the future and that's how we will get Calypso.
Yep.
Discovery's whole thing is saying that should be someone else's problem.
I do hope though that they like wrap up Calypso in this season though. Like I really want to like get a canon explanation for Calypso. Just like even if it's just a throwaway line, I would really appreciate having some like. But so real quick, what about the like I'm a little afraid of this device that they're gonna find. If it's still functional, like I really want them to like I want them to find it and realize that it's like been destroyed all along or something, it doesn't work or something like that. Like I think it's just I feel like this could be a continuity breaking thing. And I think that's the one thing I have my eye on.
Maybe they'll unburn the galaxy.
Ah, there you go. So they basically retcon all of Discovery from existence.
The other thing, there's also the possibility that this story arc leads to something that was intended to be to the propel that, the next story arc, but now they're not going to be able to do that because they canceled
it. I don't know
it.
That they haven't really done that in Discovery though.
Like, no, they have pretty much wrapped things up each season. Yeah.
Like it season three even like ended feeling like, oh, next season's going to be like rebuilding the Federation. Then it's like we rebuilt the Federation and now something is killing everybody. And
we talked about that a little bit in the Slack channel with that Bulwark article about the institutions of the Federation. We don't need to get into that a lot if you all don't want, but I agree with you completely that I was so wanting a buildup of the Federation. I think that's the politics nerd again. I would have loved to have seen more stuff with that, but maybe we that's not good television. I don't know.
We all did, and they didn't do it. What are you going to do? So.
They just never want us to see the Federation get built because they ended Enterprise before that could happen, too. So.
Right.
This is all a simulation that Riker and Troy have going on in the holodeck. we've talked about how that's the truth. Like, it's never been reality. All right. Any other final pieces of this episode that you'll want to discuss before we move on?
The Tribble.
Yeah, I saw that tribble in the corridor. Was it a tribble? I thought it looked different than a tribble.
Last episode was a tribble when
Rainer, I think it's when Rainer and Burnham are walking through the hallways, or is it Burnham and Saru or something like that? They see a tribble in the corridor at Discovery, and it's like following, like it's kind of like just doing its own thing in the corridors.
And this time. We get to learn that it's actually a neutered tribble.
Yeah, so we don't have to be afraid. So
yeah, the ship's not going to blow up halfway through the season.
Well, like maybe if they go to Klingon, that tribble causes a diplomatic incident.
Uh oh,
again.
Chekhov's
it's
tribble.
It's going to end the same way that Discovery began with the Klingon War.
They really should do a Tribble episode because every Tribble episode, and we have not a huge sample size, is amazing. The original series Tribble episode, one of the best original series episodes, not even close. And then the animated series episode with the Tribbles is also fantastic. So I encourage them to...
I love Trouble with Edward as well.
And Trials and Tribulations is also great.
So they need to give us a Tribble episode. Make that Tribble unneutered. I don't know. Maybe that's what the progenitor technology is. Maybe it's fueled off of triples.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
Depressing and funny.
All right. I think that's all she wrote, right, for the episode? All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about news then. So first of all, both Union Berlin of the Bundesliga, the top division of German soccer, and Inter Milan of the top division of Italian soccer, who are sponsored, I believe, by Paramount, are getting Star Trek logos on their jerseys, and you can go buy them.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
That's really cool.
The Union Berlin,
I was like trying to figure out where you were going with this. I was trying to marry your two interests.
Yeah.
I was stupidly surprised when I saw this on Instagram the other day. It's but the Union Berlin jersey like sold out within like minutes. I haven't looked at the Inter Milan one, but I suspect it'll be the same way. Kind of looks like Paramount's making a Star Trek play in Europe. They also did in Germany, two people wearing uniforms walking around in Berlin kind of thing, which they had done in Heathrow Airport a few years ago as well. So like they kind of do some of that stuff to advertise, which is just interesting that Paramount's like kind of doing that. But in less interesting or less good stuff that Paramount's doing, they have now said that the next season of Lower Decks will be the final season, which creator Mike McMahon came out and had like this gracious statement about, yeah, you know, it's time and we're really excited. We never said it would go on forever. And then Jack Quaid came out and said that like he implied basically that they're looking for a new home for Lower Decks.
Really? Oh my God.
So it might be like what happened with Prodigy?
Yeah, his exact quote is, I could play Boimler for 17 more seasons. No joke. I'm serious. I love that purple-haired nerd. However, hopefully we find a new home. But until then, please look forward to an amazing season 5.
As long as we don't, like, it's like, we're not going to release season 5 again.
I mean, since Paramount doesn't know how to handle Star Trek,
yeah,
then maybe we do need to find new homes.
It's so sad. Lower Decks is great, and it feels like everyone loves Lower Decks.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's the streaming model.
Is the animated more like, why are they axing the animated stuff? I would have thought that would be, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like it should be the cheapest one.
Yeah.
It's probably just the streaming model is very difficult to make money with. And so all these different streamers have found that it's not the business model they had initially imagined. So I have to wonder if it's that.
I mean, I'll be honest. I think it's probably just overestimating how much Star Trek people want to watch in a year. You know, like we are probably like the outliers in being happy that there's two or three shows a year. But like, you know, like one show a year is probably what they think has a good return on investment, which they're keeping Strange New Worlds around, but there won't be
just Strange New Worlds from now on.
Yeah.
But part of the problem, they've never done what they said they were going to do, which was have it so that Star Trek was on all year round because of COVID, because of the strikes. So it never, the model, I think they were originally thinking they could have Star Trek year round because you would have all these different series. Mm-hmm. So they'd be, you know, none of them would happen at the same time. And it never materialized.
We got pretty darn close though, because there was a good stretch where it felt like there was like maybe a month or two that would be between series.
But I also remember there were a time when a couple were happening at the same time. And so that was hard.
I think the Star Wars shows though have shown us that there's a little bit of fatigue in that model that comes in. So I bet that that's also some of it, like watching Obi-Wan like not do as well and like Ahsoka kind of flounder a bit. So it's kind of like,
but do we need all this? Was that Obi-Wan's fault for being Obi-Wan?
I
watched one episode and hated it and didn't.
Let me put it this way, when you have five shows, like we've had the same problem with Picard, right? They're not always going to be good. I don't know. We've got Prodigy now on, like, at least season 2 has found a home somewhere. Will we get a season 3? Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got this Starfleet Academy show that's apparently in production. So I'll reserve judgment on that one until it comes through. But now it's basically, the question for it is going to be like, is it better than Lower Decks when it comes out, right? Like, would we have preferred Lower Decks season 6 or Starfleet Academy season 1? And I think I'm just happy Strange New Worlds is getting a fifth season. Yep, like that is great news. Kind of a no-brainer.
Well, a fourth season, right?
Fourth season for two.
Yeah.
Well, sorry.
Third season's in production.
Right. Fifth is Lower Decks. My bad.
Yeah.
I knew it was four and five. And so that'll be good. You know, one flagship show. And there's also talk of now a origin movie, origin story. Have you heard this?
Yeah, there's like the seventh announced fourth movie in the Star Trek franchise.
But wasn't it? I thought it was something in the Kelvin timeline that's supposed to reestablish the current timeline or show how we get back into the current. I don't know.
There's not a lot to go on. This was like only a few throwaway lines in every article. But basically, it's an origin story for characters that we've already seen their origins multiple times, including in the Star Trek movies that are in the Kelvin timeline. So it's kind of like, I'm very confused as to why they think a prequel is necessary.
This is not what I need. This is not what I need.
Go forward, you guys. There's a bunch of fun stuff to do. Like, do an original sci-fi show. Like, And so there's talk of that as well. So we'll see.
I think along with all the other ones, I think there's a 5-10% chance that it actually happens. I think this is sort of like a, we promise we're doing something. Please buy us for more than our shareholder value, right? Type thing.
Yeah.
You know, and if they just Strange New Worlds movie feels like an easy win as far as I'm concerned, because Anson Mount is just amazing. You just put that out in theaters, give him an even bigger budget, make a bunch of money. I'd watch that. I'd go.
Movies don't make money anymore, though. So I don't know that that's going to be a thing.
Dune's doing okay.
It's true.
Getting a third Dune, you know. And this is, let's be honest, as you know, Star Trek was no Star Wars in terms of understanding there's good and bad, but Star Trek feels like Teletubbies compared to Dune's. Incredibly strange, everything about it. So, I think
you need to watch them.
You could sell that to the public. You know, here's a hot guy who's great, and he's the main character. And go to theaters. Give us some money.
There you go. You got the business model, man. We need to put this man in charge of Paramount. All right. Well, I think that's all she wrote for this episode of our podcast. So let's just do ratings real quick. Which one of you wants to stick your necks out and give Janelle, the person, not the episode, no, I'm kidding, the episode, a strange new rating?
I think I maybe a repeat on this one, a 7. Like I enjoyed the episode. I don't know that there's like a, I'm going to remember this one for years or anything like that. But the thing that's intriguing me is like, I'm starting to wonder, like, is this going to be the season of Discovery where none of the episodes make me go, no.
You've said this
like,
before.
It's been enjoyable. And I've been along for the ride, and I think I'm looking forward to seeing what else is happening. So
I'll go a little higher. I'm going to go 4 out of 5, mostly because, my God, we need to really start handling our problems, not with violence. And I feel like that was kind of the message at the end of this episode. And that's not what's happening in our world. And so anyway, so 4 out of 5 for me.
I also give it a 4 out of 5, but for me that's because I agree
that's
completely. Yeah, I thought this was great, and I love the way it's set up so many of its different elements. I don't think it was perfect either, you know, it won't go in a top anything list, but in terms of how they handled the themes, this was really classic heartfelt Discovery and decently well executed heartfelt Discovery. So that's a sweet spot for me.
Nice.
Well, someone's got to give it a 2.
And it's not going to be you.
No, it's not. I'm going to give this a 7. It was a solidly good episode, but like, that's fine. I wasn't sitting there like the last couple of episodes like, whoa, this is incredible. Now I'm like, yeah, it's good. It's good. So yeah, no, I definitely just also want to endorse the tonal shift in Discovery. And the pacing shift. I think they've done a great job of kind of finding their sweet spot in terms of what they've been trying to do. in terms of give us the right values while also trying to give us some interesting action on the screen. So I thought that was well done.
Which in good Star Trek form, that's when you cancel it.
Exactly.
Yes. Exactly. Once they figure it all out. Wow, this is really getting coming together. Better kill it.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Emily. Thank you, Reed. Thank you, Adam, for being here to talk about Star Trek as usual. Do enjoy.
Thanks for bringing us here.
Thank you.
And hope Rudy and Bill are having some fun off doing whatever it is they are doing. And thank you, dear listener, for making time for us in your listening week. We always appreciate talking Star Trek, and we appreciate that you listen to us talk Star Trek. Thank you, Jishnu Guha, for recording our theme music. We always appreciate you strumming away at the Klingon theme. And special thanks this week to Commander Rayner for making us all feel bad about our mental counting inabilities. Like, this dude is like able to be like, that was 6 words, that was 4 words. Well, I got one word for you, Rayner. Asshole. All right. See you next week, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.